and diabetes.
The COVID-19 pandemic severely tested the NHS, with its aftermath still posing serious challenges. Health officials and experts warn for the UK's National Health Service to survive, the next government should declare it a national emergency.
And that's all in today's international news from non-NATO media.
Thank you for listening to Rebel Alliance News. We'd like to thank our engineer, Wendell Handy, and all our contributors like Polina Vasiliev and our producer, Siri Rideau. Visit us on the web at rebelalliancenews.com and donate now by going to kpfk.org. Coming up next is Feminist Magazine. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 p.m., and I'll be back with you next Wednesday at 6 p.m., and I hope you will join us again. For KPFK, I'm West Siegmiller.
Support for KPFK comes from Elder Rosa Elderberry Ranch in the foothills of Southern California. Their new gourmet elderberry gummies, made from the fresh juice of wild-picked elderberries, sweetened with the elderflower honey from the ranch, are natural, vegetarian, and gluten-free. Their website is at ElderRosaElderberry.com.
Support comes from Art Don't Sleep and Jazz Is Dead, presenting the Columbia Psychedelic Funk Trio, Valtas, on March 25th at the Lodge Room in Highland Park. Their genre-defying sound is a blend of cumbia, surf rock, funk, and Turkish musical influences. Known for their dynamic and electrifying live performances, Valtas has become synonymous with energetic shows and captivating improvisations that transcend conventional boundaries. Tickets, visit jazzisdead.com.
This is Feminist Magazine, a weekly radical radio show and podcast produced by a diverse collective of feminists. And every week, we bring you a mix of intersectional stories and guests to help you resist and engage. And I'm Lynn Harris-Ballin, your host today, and this is what feminism can sound like.
Miami, building trust in solidarity. Today, award-winning freelance journalist based in Los Angeles, Tandisizwe Chimurenga, is here to talk about her new two-volume book about Black feminism and much, much more, titled Some of Us Are Brave, Conversations with Sisters on Life, Art, and Struggle, published in 2023 by the Canadian publisher Daraja Press. For this conversation, I invited Women magazine host Javelin Richards to join us. Yes, and I hope part of the conversation, Tandy, will help us sort of really think about the development of Black women as feminists and much, much more.
I'm sure it will, and thank you so much for having me.
Welcome, welcome. Before we get started, let me tell you a few things I discovered about Tandisizwe Chimurenga. She has been a writer and creator or co-creator of media, including newspapers, cable TV, radio, for over 20 years, and her community activism has ranged from electoral organizing to freedom for political prisoners and prisoners of war, to organizing against violence against women, to anti-police terror work and media justice. Her earlier volume was titled No Doubt, The Murders, in the S in parentheses, of Oscar Grant. And I hope we can get you to talk a little bit about that book as well. I'm sure that the three volumes are related. So my first question is, tell us who you are and how you came to writing about Black feminism.
Well, I think that to describe the book as writing about Black feminism might be a slight misnomer. I didn't start out to write about Black feminism. If that's how people want to receive it, that's fine. I started out wanting to simply document the voices of Black women or about Black women. I was part of a collective on KPFK Pacifica Los Angeles entitled Some of Us Are Brave, a collective of Black women who wanted to ensure that our voices, views, and experiences were on the air. And once the show ended, I had all of this audio, my personal audio, that I felt something should be done with it. And I immediately started thinking about doing a book. Now, this was back around 2011, 2012. I'm almost embarrassed to say it's taken that long to create this body of work or to create this publication. But at the same time, there's also that part of me that says, well, when a thing is ready, you know, it will appear, it will be birthed. So there's that. But again, this book is primarily the documenting of the interviews that I did. As a collective, we never had a centralized archive or location for all of Some of Us Are Brave shows. So the other women who I'm no longer in touch with, hopefully they had kept copies of their work. I don't know. The station didn't keep copies. So this book is representing, again, the interviews that I conducted and aired as a part of Some of Us Are Brave, audio that I gathered and aired either on Some of Us Are Brave or on other radio shows. And thirdly, audio that I had permission to record or use, but never got a chance to air. And when I was telling my publisher about it, I initially wanted to title it something else. He said, well, why not call it Some of Us Are Brave? I said, well, you know, it's not, I wasn't the only one in the group. The other women, by and large, are not represented. So they might feel some kind of way about that. And the publisher said to me, let's be brave, shall we? I said, okay, let's do it. And that's why we have Some of Us Are Brave, Volumes 1 and Volume 2.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a wonderful beginning because as many of our listeners know, as might you too, you know, there was one of the early textbooks, if you will, of Black women's studies. Part of the title was Some of Us Are Brave.
Yes, but Some of Us Are Brave, of course.
Yes.
Barbara Smith, Akasha Gloria Hull. And I always get the third sister's name wrong. I don't know if it's Patricia Hill Collins or Patricia Bell Scott. I always mix up her name.
Yeah, it's Patricia Bell Scott.
Thinking about a name for the group. Mm-hmm. Someone had suggested Sisters of the Yam. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we didn't choose that. I suggested When and Where We Enter in homage to the book When and Where We Enter by Paula Giddings, or Some of Us Are Brave in homage to that book. And the group liked Some of Us Are Brave, and that's where we went.
Well, it's a wonderful story. Thank you so much. Tell us, you said it's a collection of recordings. How did you get the idea that this is important to make two volumes, not just one?
That was a publisher's decision. The book was over 400 pages. He was like, nobody's going to be able to afford this. We're going to have to split it into two volumes. On finding in my house, in different locations in the house, audio, and I kept sending it to him. Oh, did I tell you about this one? Oh, have you seen this one? I just kept finding, and I'm still finding stuff. And so there will be more than likely a volume 3 at some point. But every time he would give me a deadline, I'd find something else and say, oh, can we include this?
So we're here today talking about the latest book published in 2023, Some of Us Are Brave, Interviews and Conversations with Sisters on Life, Art, and Struggle, 2003 to 2017, a two-volume collection. And in the first volume, the subtitle is The Shoulders on Which We Stand, Art for Our Sake. So give us a little synopsis of that volume, please.
So in The Shoulders on Which We Stand, we talk about, when I say talk about, I'm talking about the transcriptions of the interviews and or audio. We have Ayanna Jameson talking about the Octavia Estelle Butler Legacy Society. We have Barbara Ransby talking about Ella Baker, Carol Boyce Davies talking about Claudia Jones, Lisa Gay Hamilton talking about Bea Richards. We have Melina Abdullah and Regina Freer talking about Charlotta Bass and Karen Bass. Of course, Paula Giddings speaking on Ida B. Wells. We also have the transcript of a show that I first aired on Women's Magazine on KPFA and then aired later on Some of Us Are Brave here on KPFK. It's called Sisters on the Run. And it's looking at Black women who were exiled because of their work on behalf of Black liberation. So it's Ida B. Wells, Mabel Williams, Kathleen Cleaver, Asada Shakur, and Charlotte O'Neill. And under Art for Our Sake, I spoke with Adrienne Marie Brown regarding, at that time, her new book, Octavia's Brood. I talked with Ava DuVernay early in her career about all the stuff that she was doing. Carol Maylard of Sweet Honey and the Rock. Sweet Honey and the Rock was in town for, I'm not sure if it was it their 20th? I think it was their 30th anniversary concert. I spoke with Yuzan Palsy on filmmaking. While I was in Oakland, I happened upon the Oakland Library where Evelyn White was speaking because she had just published the biography of Alice Walker. Sonia Sanchez, S. Pearl Sharp, well, two of the women who were in Some of Us Are Brave, I had their interviews in my possession. I asked them for permission to reprint them in the book, and they said yes. So S. Pearl Sharp, who's an actress, she spoke with Ruby Dee and her daughter, Nora Davis Day, on the concept of love. And Elaine Miles, who's now a VP with Sony, spoke with the director, Tina Mabry, around her first major work. That's what volume one encompasses. I don't have the volume two in front of me just yet because we're putting in the finishing corrections on it, and that should be out in another couple of weeks.
Well, let's start getting more into the details about volume one. Right, Jovelyn, when you heard that list of folk whose live stories are included here, what was your reaction? And then I'll share with you mine.
I didn't have a reaction as much of a curiosity, meaning that I wanted to hear who they were through the questions that they were being asked. I was curious of how they came to do the work that they did. So my reaction was curiosity, to have an opportunity to have to live in conversations through this body of work that I don't have privy to. Something, Tandia, I'd like to ask, since you have been richly involved in these conversations through the kind of person you are by asking the questions, finding the Black women to talk with. The title itself, Some of Us Are Brave. When I hear that title, and I'm curious, what made them brave? Did you find something there that was that connected them, and each in their own ways, the work they've done that have put them in positions to be exiled, ostracized, and in some cases, receiving a lot of hate? And I think so many of us as Black women come into the space called humanity already set up with a certain amount of fear because of all the different levels in which we recognize that we're being targeted. Did you find anything inside these stories collectively that gave them the bravery to do the work, the unloving work in many cases, the unrewarded work in many cases, the ostracized, the exiled work?
I love that question, Jovelyn. So as you were putting together this, what made these women brave?
Well, I don't know if you're going to like my answer. I don't recall or remember anything in particular within the interviews that I would say made them brave. I knew about their work, which is why I wanted to interview them in the first place. So it might be because of what I knew of them before we got in front of a microphone that told me that they were brave women or that they were bold women or that they were intellectual women or beautiful women. That was what I brought to the collective. You know, how do you hold space for the differing experiences and knowledge bases and viewpoints of a grouping of Black women that is dedicated to shining a light on the voices, views, and experiences of Black women. In other words, there's a Black woman in our collective who might be interested in past life experiences or basket weaving or acupuncture. I have no interest in those. I'm interested in talking with the political people, the organizers, the politicians, the intellectuals, the academics. This other woman has as much right as I have to be in this collective, to get on the mic, to share in those 168 hours per week, or should I say that 1 hour of the 168 hours, quote unquote, in radio. She has as much right as I do to interview the women of her choosing. These are the women that I already knew about and decided that I was already interested in the work that they were doing. Basically, in answer to your question, I already knew that they were brave. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking a piece of their bravery or a piece of their creativity or a piece of their beauty, presenting it to you, the audience, hoping it will pique your interest.
Although you said that that we may not like the answer, for me, the questions don't always really give what I'm really, my soul is looking for. Mm. But yet the question gives an opportunity for conversation.
Right.
And so what my takeaway from what you just said, particularly with the collective, that a woman could be basket weaver, and that's her thing. And so she's a part of that story 1 hour out of all the other hours, because it's just as valuable because it's hers. So when I realize that when I'm asking the question, I'm asking it for myself, can I be brave? How, or others that are asking, they hear all these wonderful stories, read them, these intellects, academias, all these activists. And so somehow we may feel that we don't have the properties, the innate stuff to be brave. So we sort of kind of like just, okay, that's them, right? But this isn't a them. And so what I hear you saying is these are the women you were interested in, that you saw the bravery in their work. And yet at the same time, every woman with a voice, Black woman with a voice of the thing that she does, the basket weaving, how the basket weave and how that intricate thing and details of that empowers a community, a person, et cetera. So that's what I was looking for myself, saying, asking myself, what do I bring to this table of Black women that brings about our voices and the diversity of our voices? So that's what was at the part of my question. So you answered that well for me. Bringing that story in. So thank you.
I'm going to keep it 100 with you, as we say. Mm-hmm. I am a firm believer that everyone, all of us, have a story, have a voice. Now, just because I don't want to hear your story or your voice, or may not want to hear your story or your voice, or may not show interest in your story, your voice, does not mean that there is not someone else out there who wants to hear it, who needs to hear it, who can relate to it. I'm a firm believer. Get your story. I tell people all the time, especially sisters, tell your story.
Yeah.
Document yourself. Get it out there. Now, it might be on a day when I've just had too much and I can't listen to nothing else, or I'm engaged in something else, or to be honest, I'm just not interested in that. Tell your story, speak, write, do it.
Looking at the title of this volume, The Shoulders on Which We Stand, that suggests a certain kind of history or a certain legacy that we, subsequent to these stories, that we who are engaged in similar work, or just because we're Black women, we've learned something from the stories you're sharing here. Were there particular things that through your interviews or through these other folk interviews, were there particular things that jumped out at you, you know, and you said you're really interested in politics and intellectual work, all of those things. So what jumped out at you and what made you choose this collection of folks?
I guess we can start with the first transcript in the book, by a woman named Aminata Umoja, and her presentation is entitled Revolution Without Women Ain't Happening. And this was a presentation that I attended that I actually recorded. I had permission to disseminate. I played it on the air, and it occurred in 1993, and I have kept it close to me, with me, all of this time because of the impact that it made on me. And I believe that other Black women, as well as Black men, needed to hear it, needed to read the words of it. And she's talking about the fact that among the revolutionary nationalist Black community, we have an issue with feminism. We see it as white women. We see it as divisive. We see it as holding nothing for us as Black women, when we have a rich history of not only fighting racial oppression, but also fighting sexist oppression. And she's got a line. She even talks about how some women have what she calls gay baited or lesbian baited, you know, with Black women being called names because we stick up for other Black women, because we call out and fight against sexist oppression or patriarchy. You know, they'll call us lesbians, they'll call us dykes, they'll call us bulldaggers, they'll call us ball breakers, etc. And then she has a line, she says, "I don't care what you call me. I'm fighting for my freedom as a woman, and I'm fighting for my freedom as a new African, a Black person born in the United States, descended from Africans who were enslaved." And when I heard that, I said, "That's me. I don't care what you call me. I'm fighting for my freedom."
What you just said was powerful.
That's what Aminata said. I guess maybe this is a full circle moment. I'm not really sure. But one of the that I not only seeing it as white women's first went on the air, we had a dialogue, and it's been so long, EFK, which is a long-standing show. You have to forgive me, my memory. But we went on the air, and one of the things I contended then, and I understand it better now, but I contended then, and Black women have always contended, is what we see as a tendency to look back in history and label Black women as feminists. Mm-hmm. And we would say, well, you know, the word feminism didn't come into being until blah, 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 blah. So to call Sojourner Truth a feminist, it's like you're trying to appropriate people, especially mm-hmm. a Sojourner Truth, when we know the reaction to Sojourner Truth by Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and other women during that Seneca Falls Convention, during the era of the Seneca Falls Convention, and the era when women, white women, began to organize for their rights, all the way through to the 1960s. So there's this, again, this feeling of white women trying to rope Black women into feminism. Whereas when you talk to Black women who have an aversion to feminism because they see it as a white woman's thing, if you look closely at the work they're doing feminist work, whether they call it feminist or womanist or nothing, just trying to free and save their people. It can be seen as quote unquote feminist work, especially if you're using bell hooks' definition that feminism, you know, is for everybody and it just means you want to be free.
Hmm. And that's a part of where I existed for many years. And I still do have some resistance to the word. And I was sharing with Marvel in a separate conversation between us that I keep it somewhere in my pocket near my loose change, because I still feel a sense of the history, at least in America, of destructiveness of what being a feminist was. Yes, that it yes. was it was taking the skills, the labor, the intelligence of Black women and to for the use for white women. It was bringing Black women into rooms and spaces, and then at the same time being able to for white feminist women to put off their racism on Black women. And that, and I saw that from my peripheral. But then when I look at my life work, which has been always working in communities and domestic violence and the homeless community and whatever the labels that were, it was always in communities throughout the United States, and they were predominantly brown and Black folk. And then I knew that the work, and I knew how hard I went for the families, the people that were brown and Black, up against board members or curriculum or whatever the story might have been. I was there to be it, not just because that's your job, because that's my life work. And so that's when I began to try to entertain the thought, well, maybe someone said, well, you are a feminist. And in working with KPFA and in my own writing. But at the same time, the structure of the feminists in America was very anti-Black as far from my knowledge and what I saw. And also because I don't come into the world as an academic. Like I hold two master's degrees, but they have nothing to do with the, they're more in the arts. And I don't say more in the arts as if to negate that, is that's profound. But I also felt a sense of intimidation because when I would move in spaces where there was, let's say, a feminist meeting, there was language and there was words and there was things that didn't feel like I could really hold on to. Because I'm funny about language, but there was words that seemed to act as a way of segregation, sort of the sorting, parting of the seas. Like we use this language, you don't know that language. So it was a lot of built-in ways of segregation within that. And then, and you're right, Tandi, there was always this conversation around if you were supporting other women, this is on a personal level, then you must be this, you must be that, you must be this. And that's why I started off by saying, how do we become brave when we come into the space of humanity as Black women, Black people, already where there is a war going on before you could even take your first step.
Let me just jump in here. I want to just do a little bit of a reset. And by that, I mean the views about the quote women's movement in America is like many other dominant narratives, right? It's based on white, in this case, white feminist stories, etc. And I think one of the hopes for this program is that the listeners really get a sense that, yes, the dominant narrative is what you all just described. And at the same time, we're doing a disservice to all the various women of color formations who were doing feminist work, in quotes, doing activist work with an analysis of patriarchy, as well as racism. We're doing a disservice to them if we just sort of paint everything with the one stroke, right? Mm. So, for example, there was the Third World Women's Alliance that was based in the Bay Area. There was Combahee River Collective. There was a National Black Feminist Organization, you know, et cetera. And so what I really love about your work, Tandi, is that it documents the complexity, you know, it documents a complex history. And you said, you know, in the beginning, you know, it may not be feminist. All the folks, you know, who tell their stories or whose stories are being told, absolutely cared about patriarchy, about racism, and some cared about imperialism and colonization. So let's take this opportunity to tell the complex story that folks after this program will see that it's quite a disservice to keep painting that old story, you know, of feminism is a white woman thing. Because in a way, it's true if you look at white liberal feminists, especially, right? So
but it's also transnational feminism.
Yes,
there's
exactly.
Also colonial feminism.
Right.
There are feminisms all over the world, but we here in the U.S., and that has to do partly with how media frames things
exactly.
Also, because media wants to keep us separate and isolated and not in concert with our sisters in Africa, in the Caribbean, and in other parts of the world, like the Philippines, like India, like Britain, etc. So there are absolutely other strains of feminism. There are absolutely other ways to look at feminism. And there absolutely is a need to continue to call out the white supremacy of feminism in the U.S., of mainstream feminism, of U.S. society, because white supremacy is the glue that binds it all, whether you're male, female, differently abled, whether you're an elder or a youth, whether you're gender nonconforming, regardless of what your sexuality is, all of the quote-unquote movements that we know about. There's going to be that mainstream movement. There's going to be that movement that is infected from head to toe with white supremacy. And then there's going to be a movement that is radically left of everything, that is critiquing and putting forth visions and views of true liberation.
We see the movements globally talking about capitalism, imperialism, and decolonial movements. And so one thing I noticed from the collection is not just U.S. feminisms or U.S. Black women operating in the U.S., right? Because I think one of the things also with folks in the U.S. is that even some of the most progressive ones are very U.S. focused, mm-hmm. right? There's a forgetting that Black has different meanings, different bodies of people in different parts of the world. So thank you for including those voices, as well, because I think those voices really matter.
Building trust in solidarity. Yeah, this is Ziggy Marley. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and 98.7 in Santa Barbara. It's really powered by the people. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Feminist Magazine on KPFK on 90.7 FM and kpfk.org. I'm your host today, Lynn Harris-Ballin.
You just listened to a conversation with award-winning freelance journalist Tandisizwe Chimurenga and Jovelyn Richards of Women's Magazine talk about Tandy's new 2-volume book about Black women organizing, art, culture, politics, and much more, titled Some of Us Are Brave, Conversations with Sisters on Life, Art, and Struggle, published in 2023 by Canadian publisher Daraja Press. Listen now to the second half of this interview. Do you want to share with us another story that you were really, as you said, with Aminata's interview, just really changed how you think about the world or how you think about your life, lives of Black folks, Black liberation movement? Was there another piece that jumped out like that to you?
There was. In volume one, it's entitled An African Traditional View of Abortion. Now, there are going to be some people that hear that and be like, what in the world is she talking about? Which is, the same response that I had. I had attended a lecture in my community at a Yoruba spiritual temple, and the priest, known as a Babalawo, had talked about this one night, and it blew my mind, so I had to interview him. I interviewed him, of course, and put it on the air along with an interview. His name is Fashina Falade. And I interviewed a woman by the name of Judy Rosenthal, who I believe she's retired now, was a professor in Michigan, because she had written a book talking about African traditional religion in Togo. And I had scanned through her book and had seen some similar things. I said, why don't, this is a good opportunity to talk about this during the month of January, which is the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. So this particular interview that I conducted, it aired in January 24th, 2008 on Some of Us Are Brave. We started with a clip from a film by a woman named Faith Pinnock, and the film is called Silent Choices. It should be still available out there somewhere. And it looks at abortion, views on abortion in the Black community, and how many feel that that is also a white woman's issue. And so I decided to ask Fashina Falade and Judy Rosenthal what it was they knew about African traditions in terms of abortion. In the U.S., abortion is rarely framed as a medical procedure. It is almost always framed as a moral failing or a moral decision. There's something wrong with, why are these women having all of these abortions? What is going on with, their their character, their sense of upbringing, their sense of restraint. This is murder. You know, fetus is a person, and you know, we complain about people being murdered on the street and at war, but what about these babies that are being murdered? And you know, white black women, you shouldn't be found. That's a white woman's issue. You know, we've never had an issue with that. And so I wanted to find out if it was the same type of moral trappings around abortion. And what I was told was that abortion is not seen as a moral issue. It's seen as a practical issue. It's not encouraged for obvious reasons. However, if a woman needs to have an abortion, she needs to consider it carefully. She needs to take into consideration spiritual factors, and then she needs to pay for it, as in go to a hospital and get it done correctly. Don't drink a solution. Don't try and do something to yourself. Don't go to somebody who ain't got no business being around human beings, let alone trying to get inside of you. And so I was very, very intrigued by that perspective. And I thought it should go out over the air so that black women cannot have a lot of. Now, let me be honest here. I don't know of a lot of black women who have had a lot of hand wringing over abortion, but I do know of a couple, you know, after we talked, I could tell, you know, it's something that affected them. Mm-hmm. Maybe when they were younger, or even as adult women who simply could not. I can't have another child right now. My husband and I, we just can't. We've got four kids. We just can't do it. And so it was my hope that this would add to the conversation and possibly help some women, or a woman, one woman, to draw upon her traditions as a black woman, as an African woman, draw upon her tradition and her ancestors, and not feel as if she has committed a sin against God and is going to go to hell because of a decision she had to make. Mm-hmm. So that was the whole reasoning behind it. And that interview, which aired over the airwaves on Some of Us Are Brave, is included in the book, Volume 1.
It's fabulous, I have to say, and probably a perspective that most Black women have not heard of unless they're from some African cultural perspectives. They've been steeped in that. And, you know, it would be interesting. When was this interview done? Do you remember what year?
I want to say I did it in 2008. Now, in 2004, when there was the March for Women's Lives that was held in Washington, D.C., you know, that was broadcast live on all five Pacifica stations. I attended that and got sound bites from a couple of women in the crowd. Those sound bites appear in Volume 2. So that was recorded in 2004. This particular interview was recorded in 2008, but I'm quite sure I heard Fashina Folliday's lecture a few years before that.
I'm asking that question because I'm thinking about the influence of fundamentalist Christianity on the continent as we speak, particularly around the issue of LGBT. And so just in my mind, wondering if that influence has also spilled over into this question of abortions and reproductive rights.
I'm sure it has.
Yeah,
I haven't really heard about it in the media. The media focus is usually on the LGBTQ situation. Also, as in the U.S., you have Christianity, and then you have Black liberation theology. There's all you have womanist theology, which is being led by Black women in the clergy and officiated with the clergy. So I'm sure on the continent, there are those strands also of fundamentalist Christianity and resistance to fundamentalist Christianity.
So let's focus also on the next section of the book, which is called Art for Our Sake. Your first interview here with Adrienne Marie Brown, when I hear her name, I don't think about her as, you know, somebody who writes about writers, you know. I think about her as someone who's giving just great guidance on how to do activism in these days, in these times. You also included Ava DuVernay, who is doing fabulous work. She has a new film out now, and so forth. So talk about why this art section matter to you?
Well, you know, art is central to our lives. Art is part of our culture. How we creatively express ourselves is part of the culture. And again, because I knew of the work of several of these people, I said, let's get them in here. Let's get them on the radio. Because the other thing, some of us are Braves. Part of our mission was to provide resources and information to our community. So if there was a play happening, if there was a movie opening, if there was spoken word, if there was dance, if there was anything going on in the community, we wanted people to know about it, not just from a community calendar perspective, but if we could get the actual artists themselves in and interview them, you know, we wanted to do that. So we talked to, or sometimes I talk to, a film director or a playwright or a director of plays or an actor, right? Or a poet or a healer, you know, and wanted to make sure that that was represented not only on the airwaves, but also in the book.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm delighted to see Sweet Honey in the Rock, Carol Maillard, you know, doing that one, especially because I consider Sweet Honey in the Rock a national treasure. If you pick up the book, dear listeners, you'll see a fabulous collection of artists of all kinds in this section.
And I like the choice, Tanya, that that was made in terms of interviews, because specifically this the artist as well, going back to the part of the conversation where Black women can find themselves in this center around what is Black feminism, what is it to be brave, and then coming from it from the thing that they know most about themselves. So as artists, they come may come about that change that they're making in the world, fighting for Black life, Black liberation, through their poems, through their dance, through whatever they're doing. So to give that bouquet through this work, all for someone to have a place to land, to find a home, which I think, like myself, and there has to be others trying to find a home inside of Black feminists or any kind of way that in Black liberation, whatever they want to call that. But to know that they're doing their work might not always be valued in the mainstream or under any kind of category, but that it is a part of this work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much to both of you. I'm in conversation with Tanza Sizwe Chimurenga, journalist, media person, as well as my Women Magazine Collective co-host, Javelin Richards.
In the next segment of our program,
we'll talk about the second volume of Some of Us Are Brave. And in the second volume, the focus here is on, and I love this title as well, the subtitle, Black Lives Have Always Mattered. And there's a section on Black women's health. And then, interestingly, brothers and sisters. Yeah, brothers on sisters. Yes, I'm misreading here. So that's important as well. So talk to us about that. Why, apart from the number, apart from the, you know, the your publisher saying it's going to be too expensive and you need to have two volumes, apart from the economics of it, how did this collection get framed in the way it did?
Basically, I looked at what I had collected and I made the decision to talk about standing on the shoulders of those who have come before us, either the actual human beings, the actual individuals, or on our African people's tradition. And then I wanted to talk about contemporary Black women or events in service of Black liberation. So that's why you have a standing on the shoulders and Black lives have always mattered. There were times, you know, Some of Us Are Brave was dedicated to centering Black women's voices. We center their voices. That doesn't mean that no man can speak. You know, we know that sometimes men take up too much space. That's why we center and prioritize Black women's voices. But we would have let some brothers come on in and talk. but they couldn't just run their mouths. You got what do you have to say to us about Black women? So that's why we have Gerald Horn talking about one of his books on Shirley Graham Dubois. That's why we have the actor Clayton LeBeouf. If his name does not sound familiar to the audience, if they've watched The Wire or Homicide: Life on the Street or Something the Lord Made, they know his face. I discovered that he had been doing work to further expose the life and legacy of a woman named Henrietta Vinton Davis, who, as he called her, an elocutionist, an orator, a Shakespearean actress who was active in the Garvey movement. We also had Robin D.G. Kelly speaking briefly about his work, illuminating some of the history of Charlotta Bass, who was basically a Los Angeles institution. So I thought it was very important to include their voices and perspectives on specific Black women because they were on the air. So they were broadcast over Some of Us Are Brave. Need to include that in the work. And that final chapter in Volume 2, Sisters in Struggle, if you notice the subtitle of the book, it says Sisters, S-I-S-T-A-S. And the final chapter of the book says Sisters, S-I-S-T-E-R-S. So that was a little slight play on the meanings of the words. That final chapter has two interviews, or should I say two presentations I was allowed to record. One from Linda Evans, white anti-imperialist freedom fighter, longtime struggler for liberation, comrade of Susan Rosenberg, Marilyn Buck, as well as Mutulu Shakur and Sekou Odinga, and Stormy Ogden, who is a Native American woman, Kashaya Pomo, based in the Bay Area, who has done decades of work around Native American women in prison. So sisters, as in these are not Black women, but they are our sisters. We are in solidarity with them.
And why did you decide to include their voices?
Because I think it's important for Black women to not only be in solidarity with ourselves, but to recognize when we have things in common with other people, other men, other women, etc., who share similar circumstances to ourselves, or who are working to eradicate the oppressions that we suffer under.
Brilliant, brilliant addition. Javelin, what's on your mind right now?
I'm listening and I'm much appreciating the difference between the two, because it offers an opportunity for me and others, I think, to think about sisters, men also fighting for Black women, that it does bring a sense of solidarity. It means that anytime I don't have to compartmentalize my heart, my social change, but to include everybody that's a part of that story, then that feels more empowering to me, because we cannot do it alone. I think one of the people that mentioned it inside of the readings is said something in the same similar vein, that we cannot do this without each other. It's finding the others that are committed to the doing. And that the more people we find committed to the doing of liberation, of Black liberation, of humanity moving forward, evolution, to save the planet, to save our lives, then those are the people we want to include, so that therefore spread that vibe outward. And the more voices to share it, the more voices can hear. Like what I can't hear from one person, as Tanya said earlier, she may not be interested in certain things, but that she's interested, she's going for. Same as me. I'm an artist. I'm interested in those who are using their art for Black liberation, for Black feminists, whatever they want to, however they want to name that for themselves, but that I find in their work, that's who I'm drawn to. I can hear them. I can feel them. I can understand them. That's how my spiritual learning takes place, through art. That's where that is, so that I can appreciate that. So that's what I'm experiencing as I'm listening to this segment of discussion around this work.
Thank you. I'm also reflecting similarly, and I'm wondering, in these times of genocide and attempts at genocide in more than one place around the world, and several of them in countries where Black folks are, Sudan, for example, Yemen. How do you think reading these stories, listening to these stories, as it were, how do you think that will help the listeners really think about the importance of this critical moment and the necessity to stop, do the ceasefires, not just in one place, Gaza, but in all the other places where similar things are happening? Do you think there's a chance that readers can get that kind of understanding through this wonderful, deep collection of stories?
There's always, I think, the not only the potential, but the actuality of looking back and finding something useful. I think there's always that possibility, that actuality. I think that we might need to do it a little bit more often. Has something been done before? Did it work? Did it not work? What were the ideas? What were the thoughts? What were the conversations? Are we still having the same conversations that we had then? Has someone or has a person grown? Have they remained stagnant? Have they changed their position and gone back to something or another? I think all of that is valuable information. And so Some of Us Are Brave is a documenting. One brother told me, he said, this work is not recent, but it's relevant. And that's from a Black man who read the book.
Part of that answer is, as I was reading the stories, is that was my response, that this discussion, the interviews are speaking about things that's going on right now, right here. The other thing I thought about, well, not thought about, but I started to gather why it might be important for anyone to read that, is to see that this is not a new thing, but that there have been brave folks fighting for liberation forever in this human story. And in this particular volume of work, it has this time frame to see those answers. When I think of what others would get out of this volume of work, is that they're going to be keeping company. They're going to find some stories that's going to keep company with them in the place where they're at in this moment. That someone to keep them company as they ask themselves, what the heck is going on? What can I do? What's happening? And to dismantle maybe some of the fears, concerns, because they're hearing stories from different time frames in history. The other thing I got out of the stories is that there was a thread that I found. Things like, for instance, Michelle Alexander, when you thanked her for being a part of the interview and for the work she does, she says, I'm thrilled that so many people are carrying on to the next stop, that people turned and are interested in talking about mass incarceration, which was her story, but that she was shocked because she feels she gets so much energy that is negative, and to have someone give gratitude for the work, to acknowledge her. Finding places where they were speaking of feeling love from being acknowledged from a place of respite through the interviews. They had a place to land, to talk. And then one of the ones that really was really interesting to me came from I think it was Ghana. It was beautiful because it talked about restorative justice in its own way. It said, we were very organized before the scholars and religion came. And that to me was an aha moment, that people were living lives that were nurturing and life-giving. And for example, they said they were bringing victims and perpetrators together. They had systems in place that were not about punitive or ostracizing. So that conversation that was had with me as I was reading, that was a conversation that somewhere in me needed to have. And I think people are going to, when they get the volume, whatever stories they come to them, they're going to be a conversation. I think conversation is so incredibly important, that inner conversation. So that's part of what I think folks will get as they begin to read. They'll have a conversation with themselves through the voice of others.
I was chuckling because I was like, is she talking about my book? I don't remember that. And then I remembered it wasn't Ghana. It was Guinea. That was Amadou Diallo's mother, Kadiatou Diallo, speaking about life, women in Guinea.
when I read that we were very organized before the scholars and religion came, somewhere in me, the conversation that I wanted to engage in is that there's parts of all of us with ancient memory. As I'm looking at my Zoom, you have a statement on that says, so much of the work of oppression is policing the imagination by Sadia Hartman. And when I read this piece, how we were all organized before the scholars and religion came, I said to myself, that conversation need to hear is in our imagination, are the tools, the recipes, the rhythms of how we can be with one another. There are so many conversations people looking to have, these conversations people probably didn't know they was waiting to have with themselves.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I'm taking from these final comments is that whatever understandings, knowledge are produced, whatever histories we learn about, we have to activate them. We have to figure out, you know, how to use them in such a way that it actually informs what we do, how we think about things, how we're organizing, and all those actions of social justice, economic justice, et cetera. This is going to be a fabulous foundation for history of methods that are traditional, understandings that are traditional in various African and African-American cultures, you know, that can help us think about this moment in such a way that our imaginations would be reactivated, can really imagine that another world is possible and that we're going to make it happen. From the bottom of my heart, Kanda Sizwe Chimurenga, journalist, artist, media person, thank you so much for spending your time with us, and my co-host, Javelin Richards, who has her own show coming up. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you, Marco.
Thank you so much for inviting me onto your airwaves. I appreciate it. Love is a bond. Miami,
building trust in solidarity. And we're wrapping up another edition of Feminist Magazine. And thanks to all of the contributors today. Feminist Magazine is produced by a coalition of feminist volunteers. Don't forget, you can find all the links from our program today on our website, feministmagazine.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter and sharing behind-the-scenes photos on Instagram. Or just email us, oldschoolstyle @feministmagazine@yahoo.com. Our programs are archived in the kpfk.org audio archives. You can find our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and via the Stitcher app on your phone, too. Today's intro music was by Maya Jane Coles. And tune in next Tuesday for more from Feminist Magazine. Thanks for listening.
Not only are KPFK listeners smart, interesting, and forward-thinking, you're also very generous and deeply appreciated. Thank you so much for pledging your support to KPFK during our fund drive.
Hey, Scott Horton here to let you know that Anti-War Radio is at Thursday afternoons at 2:30 here on KPFK. For a dozen years, I've brought you the best experts, journalists, and activists working to end the American empire. Check out the archives. More than 5,800 interviews going back to 2003 at scotthorton.org. Talk to you Thursday at 2:30.
Yo, yo, what's up? It's Emiliano.
And Just the Best.
Coming at you with the sickest, most happening show on the airwaves every Friday night.
That's right. It's Soul Rebel Radio. Oh my goodness. I just can't contain the excitement.
Well, hold on there, Jazz. What's the deal with Soul Rebel Radio?
Well, let me tell you and all the beautiful people of SoCal that Soul Rebel Radio is the best show on the air. Always coming at you with the best mix of segments around.
What? Like what?
Well, there's music, health, fitness, always with new producers dropping a 411 each week.
That's right. Our contributors rotate from week to week, so you never hear the same theme twice.